We have been this year then beginning a study of the book of Genesis, and we began a few months ago looking at the creation of the world, and then we transitioned looking at the creation of man, the fall of man, Cain and Abel, and how sin passed on down to man, and then we spent a couple weeks looking at Noah and the global flood, and last week we looked at what is classically referred to as the Tower of Babel, but is more about the division of the nations and the division of the land. And we considered at the very end of the prophetic importance of Babel and Babylon and how it comes even into today. We didn't get to spend a lot of time on that, but the importance of it. And today, you know, as we went through that time, we looked at the chronology and such. And on your sermon note sheets, I've had the little chronology on the side, and you don't have those today. But just if you can kind of put that in your brain where we're at with the chronology, is that we're right now about 2,000 Anno Mundi. And I had someone ask, what's Anno Mundi mean? And Anno is year of, Mundi is the world. And so like when they talk about the World Cup, what do they actually call it? It's called the, you don't know why, I figured you'd have it down pat. Anyways, it's something like Mundi. It's Latin. Mundi is Latin. And so Anno Mundi means year of the world. So you're counting from the beginning. Now, if you're an evolutionist, I mean, you may have multiple dates, okay? But if you're a creationist, if you believe that the Bible is literal in its interpretation, then we can debate within a few years. But we're talking about around 2000 Anno Mundi is the time that Noah dies on the face of the earth, and soon thereafter the time when Abram is called from the land of Ur. And that's what we're going to be starting to look at today, is the call of Abram. But it's a millennial thing, not, you know, like we did the big thing when we turned 2000, you know, there's all the big, you know, New Year's celebrations and stuff like that. We're not talking about from that side, but it does begin a new phase in God's working in man. There is, in theology, a term that many of you might have probably heard, and you probably embody because you are, dispensationalism, okay? A dispensation is a stewardship. It's a dispensing of something. It kind of makes sense, dispensation, so it's a dispensing. And so how I joked earlier about Ben being the blank paper dispenser, you know, as he walked around, well, he was giving blank paper to those who wanted it. He was issuing out things. And so a dispensation then is a time when God is dispensing things into the world in a new manner, okay? And so a dispensation then is a system of biblical interpretation that sees a series of chronologically successive dispensations or periods in history in which God relates to human beings in different ways under different biblical covenants. And if you had your sermon note sheets, I've got all this on there. But traditionally, there are seven dispensations that people will refer to. There is the Age of Innocence. Does anybody have an idea of what that dispensation is? The Garden of Eden, okay? And so there was the Age of Innocence. Then there was the Age of Conscience, and that is the post-Garden time between the Garden of Eden and Noah. And then after the Age of Conscience, there's the dispensation of human government, and that is because what we saw at the very end when Noah came off of the ark, God gave to man then the power of capital punishment. I know there's a lot of people who are opposed to capital punishment, but God gave man the power and the authority to exact capital punishment upon those who kill man. And so he said that if someone would kill, even an animal, would kill a human because it's made in the image of God, then that person or that animal would come to capital punishment, would lose its life because of that. The next dispensation that we see is the dispensation of promise, and that's what we're going to begin looking at today. With Abram, the promise that was given to Abram. And then after this is the old covenant, or law, okay? And so it's the dispensation of law. And then after that, what would be the next dispensation after the law was given? Anybody have an idea? The new covenant, or the dispensation of grace, okay? It's the church age. And then there's one more to come, and that's the millennial kingdom, when Christ comes back and reigns on the earth. Now, there are others who would be called ultra-dispensationalists, and I don't mean that as being rude or whatever, but they would divide history down even more, and they would talk about the tribulation period being a different dispensation, and they would just, you know, divide and parse down. I tend to go the other way. Though I see those seven and I'm good with them, I tend to go the other way. I tend to minimize. And personally, I come back and I see three primary dispensations. I see pre-Israel, Israel, post-Israel. And then I see the renewal of God working it out in the millennium. And so for the first 2,000 years, there was pre-Israel. Around the year 2000 Anno Mundi, a little bit past, but enough for a fudge factor here, God calls Avram, which we're going to begin to look at. And then around the year 4000 Anno Mundi, Christ is cut off. Christ is crucified. And so that means then there's another approximately 2,000 years where God's going to deal with the church age. It seems makes sense to me. And I don't want to get into this, to a major rabbit trail on that one, but I could spend some time talking to you about things biblically, numerologically from the Bible, things that are from science and different things that that I've done a lot of research on, and that I'm very comfortable with that. But I'm not a prophet or son of a prophet. I don't pick days or and that kind of stuff. But I think that God has given us a lot of information and has placed the stars, the moon, and the sun, the moon, the stars in the skies as signs for us as well prophetically, and they have great importance. So, but today we want to transition then into what I think, what I believe, is the second major dispensation of God's working within man. Okay, now understand that I understand the breakups within before Abraham. Okay, but what I see is the second major grouping, and that is this call of Abram, the call of Abram. And so we begin to look at this call of Abram, which Steve read earlier in Genesis chapter 12. With the faith of Abram. Now, because, again, I've said this before, I like to put myself into, insert myself into the biblical account. Make myself the good guy, make myself the bad guy. You know, judge not lest ye be judged, and with what judgment you judge others, it shall be measured unto you. And so, you know, if as I look at a biblical account and I do the, good grief, what was he thinking of, or what were they thinking of, I'd like to place myself back in that position and say, where would I have been? What would I have been doing at that point? And it's really easy to realize what? I might have made the same mistake. I might have been wrong just like they were. In fact, I might have been worse. Okay? Well, we start off with the good side of Abraham today, though, Avram. Okay? And you all know that Avram becomes Avrahim later on. And so if I intermix Avram and Abraham and Avrahim or whatever, then we're talking the same individual here. Okay? But Avram was his original name. And it was Avram who was called from the land of Ur. And so I would like to look back now, Genesis chapter 11, just for some context, beginning at verse 27 of Genesis chapter 11, verse 27, says, this is the genealogy of Terah. Terah begot Avram, Nahor, and Haran. Haran begot Lot. And Haran died before his father Terah, in his native land in Ur of the Chaldeans. Then Avram and Nahor took wives. The name of Avram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife, or Sarai, was like Steve said, is probably more accurate, Sarai. And the name of Nahor's wife, Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah, and the father of Iscah. But Sarai was barren, she had no child. And Terah took his son Avram and his grandson Lot, the son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, his son Avram's wife, and they went out with them from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to the land of Canaan, and they came to Haran and dwelt there. So the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. Now we begin in verse 1 of chapter 12 with the word now. Now. In I've talked about this in different settings at different times, but in Hebrew, there are different prefixes. And we talked about this a few weeks ago when we were talking about, I don't know if you remember, we talked about the Beit and the Mem and the Lamed. Lamed meaning to, Beit meaning in, Mem meaning with, and they have different terms. Well, there's the Vav, okay? And Vav can be used as a prefix. And Vav, we would bring over as a V or a W, okay? More likely we would use W. And it is used as a conjunctive, okay? And there are multiple ways that Vav is used as a conjunctive. It can say that this is joining this equally, like this and that. So the book is red and white. It is equally red, is equally white. But it can be used in a consecutive manner, as it's translated here, Nile. Not Nile like the river, but now. And the idea is that it becomes a parenthetical thought, that we're going to insert this into the context of what we just discussed. So Genesis chapter 2, okay, ends the 7 days of creation, the seventh day. But after the first two verses where the seventh day of creation is discussed in Genesis chapter 2, we read, now, and it goes on and gives us a greater definition of day six, how God worked within day six of creating man and then the animals, and God, man named the animals, you know, that God put man in the garden, and then he finally made the woman, and so on and so forth. Is that making sense to you? Okay, same concept here. Okay, so in Genesis chapter 12, now all of a sudden we're going to read a little bit more of what happened there in Genesis chapter 11 in those little bitty verses, because Genesis chapter 11 is all about the genealogy. Okay, and so I skipped the first 20-something verses and not reading all the different names and the so-and-so begotten, so-and-so begotten, so-and-so begotten, and we started with Terah. Okay, because that's really where we're at, Terah begatting Avram, and that brings us to where we are with the call of Avram. But this then is going on in the same light. And so in verse 1, as we read earlier, it says, now Yahweh said to Avram, get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house, to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great. And you will be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you. And in you all the families of the earth shall be what? Shall be blessed. And so God calls Avram, I think, from the land of Ur. Okay? And when he calls him, what happens? He does come. We'll talk about this, okay? But, and we're going to split this out in just a moment, a little bit more detail. But apparently, his dad went with him. Up to where? Haran. He went to Haran, and then I don't know if his dad was ill of health or whatever, okay? But apparently they hung out in Haran till what?
He died.
Dad died. And then Avram, what? Continues the journey. And so we see this call of God in Genesis chapter 12. And God gives to Avram this proposed challenge. And I want you to think about the challenge. I put myself in Avram's place a lot. And I think, man, I don't know if I would have done this thing. What does God call him to do? What's the challenge? What's the gauntlet, if you would, that he's supposed to run?
Leave everything.
I want you to leave everything. Yes, and I'm not even going to tell you where I'm taking you. I want you to go to a land that I'm going to show you. Could you imagine what your family would say if you took you, your wife, and your children? I understand Abram didn't have any children right now, but he has a household. He has servants. He's got flocks. Okay, he's got a business. I mean, it's not just he and Sarah E. You know, they're jumping in the Volkswagen Beetle, and you know they're going to live like a bunch of hippies for a couple years and just enjoy the land. And you know, when the wild seed kind of blows over, then they'll settle down and grow up. You know? I mean, that's kind of how we picture the American story here, right? He's how old? 75. He's 75 years old. So he's not in his 20s. It's not like he's just got to, you know, get this thing out of his system, you know? He's 75 years old. He's a businessman. He's wealthy. And he turns and says, God, now you need to understand as well from Joshua 24, and we'll see this in a moment, that they weren't a God-fearing family. They served other gods. And so now all of a sudden, here, Avram is going to insert Yahweh into this pagan world. And Avram comes and says, Yahweh has called me to a land. Where's the land? I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? Well, he said he'd show it to me when I got there. Well, how's he going to do it? I don't know. Probably in the same way he just told me to go. is he going to provide for you, protect you? I mean, you know, along the way, there's what? There's danger going out. Well, I don't know. God just told me to do it. I mean, could you imagine that? I mean, bring it into today. Okay, so it's me, Marcia, and seven kids. We'll make it a couple years ago, you know, I'm taking them all with me. And I come in one day and I say, look, I believe God has called me out west. Where? I don't know. I feel in prayer very clearly on Thursday that he told me that I was to on Monday, pack everything up and leave everything here, and we're just going to get an I-20, and we're just going to start heading west. And he would let me know where I needed to turn and where I needed to go. And when I got to where I was supposed to be, he would let me know. What would you guys think of me? There'd be partial thoughts there. Some of you, because, you know, hindsight being 2020, we have Abraham and all that kind of stuff. Some of you may be thinking, wow, that's really spiritual, I think. I think that he's really great faith. There's a thin line between faith and stupidity, Bob. And, you know, don't we think that way sometimes? We really do. You know, and so, I mean, when we put out a church budget, there's always, you know, we don't battle here. It's been wonderful. But just in my mind, just as we go, there's always the battle of my brain, and if you've been involved in that part, between what? Basing the budget off of what has came in last year, what we theoretically know we should be getting in, and what we believe God wants us to do. There was a church in Vancouver many years ago, when the Olympics was coming to Vancouver, that believed by faith, and understand they were church our side, okay? And so their budget was like in the, you know, the 40 to 60,000 range max, okay? And they believed by faith that God wanted them to reach the world that was coming to Vancouver. And as they put together the budget for that, it was well over $150,000. Now, my facts and figures may not be totally exact, but I'm pretty close. And that's what they budgeted. And they believed by faith that God wanted them to do that and that they were going to move forward in doing that. And they prayed toward that end. And at the end of the next year, God had met exactly what he had burdened them to do. Now understand that there's a balance act that goes on there. And I can't imagine what that would have been like for Abraham at that moment when he got that call, that challenge from God to leave everything and to go to this mysterious other land. But yet, what do we know? He went. We'll talk about that in a moment. But along with this proposed challenge was a promised blessing. And God said to him, if you do this, if you leave everything and go to the land that I'm going to show you, then I'm going to what? I'm going to bless your socks off. And not only am I going to bless you, I'm going to bless those who bless you, and I'm going to curse those who curse you. Not only am I going to just overwhelm you with my blessings, but I'm going to watch over you. And those who are good to you, I'll be good to them. Why? What do you think happens when people are blessed because they're blessing you? They want to what? They're preferable to you. They want to keep blessing you, right? I mean, that's why some people give and they tithe because they read in 2 Corinthians chapter 9 that you cannot give God, and they think, well, if I give to God, God's going to outgive me, right? And so therefore I make more money. God doesn't work that way, you know. It's just if you're doing it for the wrong reasons, God has a tendency to hold back and let you learn the lesson. But God did that. He says, I'm going to bless those who bless you. And I'm going to curse. I'm going to punish. I'm going to come negatively at those who harm you. You don't have to worry about harming others. You don't have to worry about turning the other fist rather than turning the other cheek. Because behind you is someone bigger and badder than you. Badder not meaning evil, but awesome than you. Who can take care of you? Bad illustration of you. I've thought about it for years. I never saw the movie. I just saw the what do you call it? The trailers or whatever, the previews or whatever. But was it called Big Brother? It was Danny DeVito and was it Arnold Schwarzenegger? Okay, is those the two guys? You know, Danny DeVito, if you remember, was the little guy who was like a comedian or whatever, but a really short little guy. And then Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know. And the idea was that Arnold Schwarzenegger, what? He was behind Danny DeVito. He protected him. And so nobody messed with Danny DeVito because they didn't want to mess with Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know? And so David goes to battle with Goliath. You know? And everybody else is quaking. You know? They're just all shaking. But David says, man, you know, God's delivered me from the lion and God's delivered me from the bear. What's this heathen? You know? And so he goes out before Goliath and Goliath are, am I a dog that you come after me with sticks and stones, you know? And David comes out and says, listen, you're coming at me with a spear and a sword and a shield, but I'm coming to you in the name of the Lord. And today, God is going to hand you over to me, and I'm going to cut off your head, and I'm going to feed it to the birds. And then, unseen to everybody else, was the eternal Arnold Schwarzenegger, if you would. How do you compare God to Arnold Schwarzenegger? Anyways, you know, God kind of hanging out there with Goliath saying, here, baby, pitch it here, Davy. Pitch it here, Davy. You know? And even if David missed his mark, he wouldn't have missed his mark, right? Because God's sitting there going, bam! You know, and flinging. Did you ever wonder why Goliath fell forward when he was getting hit by something so hard that's going to sink into his forehead? You think he'd have what? Did what? Stumbled backwards, but he fell forward. I think he was being projected this way at the same time that the stone was coming this way. And anyways, so a lot of fun, you know? I mean, it's that big. And so God's saying to Abram the same concept. I'm going to bless those who bless you. I'm going to what? I'm going to curse those who curse you. I've got your back, Abram. And if you, all you have to do is what? All you have to do is trust me and obey. Trust and obey. There is no other way, right? I mean, we say that to be happy in Jesus, you know? But Abram had to find it out. And so we see that Abram, what? He did obey. And now look at the level of his obedience, okay? What does God call him to do? First of all, he says, get out from your what? Your country. Leave your country. So it's not even, you know, for me, it's getting on I-20. I'm staying in America, right? But he told him to go drive down to Hartsfield and do what? Get on a plane. Which plane? I'll let you know when you get there. Just walk through the concourse. They wouldn't let you do that today. But could you imagine? Could you imagine just walking through the concourse? You know? Where are you going, sir? I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? Well, God told me to come to Hartsfield and that he was going to put me and my family on the plane that he'd show me. Which plane was it? I don't know. He said I'd know when I got there. Well, how are you going to know when you get? I don't know. I mean, you get it? I mean, he just told me that I'd know when I get there. I mean, where do you think I'd wind up? No, I'd be in jail. I mean, they'd be arresting me right now. I'm a terrorist. I'd be ending on a plane because God would have had my back, right? That's right. And so, yeah. So ultimately, but in today's world mindset, though, they'd be looking at me like, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, you know? But he did it. Abram left his country. What's important about that? It's your culture. It's everything you know. It's what you live in. Do you understand? Missionaries have to do this all the time. We're going to have a special, I think, in a week or two of a song that is really special. And it says, but Jesus, God talking, says, my table is full. Everybody wants to come to my table. Everyone wants to feast at my table. My fields are empty. My fields are empty. I called my children to go work in the fields. But all they want to do is eat the pancakes at the table. They want to eat the steak at dinner time. But I need somebody to do what? work the fields. In the same sense that God has called Abram to go, do you realize that he's called each of us to go? Go ye therefore and make disciples. Go into all the world and preach the gospel. God has called us to go. In fact, in Matthew 28, when we read, go therefore and teach all nations, I believe a better translation of that would be having been sent. That Jesus had already told the disciples to go. And it's an aorist participle. I know that you don't care about that. But other than the aorist means that it's past tense. And a participle means that it's that the activity is from to the in perspective to the leading verb. And the leading verb is make disciples. And so it means before you make a disciple, you need to what? Go. And so he's saying, look, I've already sent you. I've already told you to go. You just need to what? Do it. Go. And as you go, then you're going to do what? You're going to make disciples. So as you go, you're in the field, you're supposed to start harvesting. You're supposed to begin proclaiming the word. But you got to go. And so Abram gave us this example. He left his country. He left the familiarity of his surroundings to obey God. While it wasn't just his country. Oh, I have a picture of it. I forgot I had the map up there. Now, just so you know, this technologically advanced moment that I'm in, if I was here looking at my screen instead of doing what I normally do, it has my next slide coming up. And so I would have known the map was there. This is a confession. Anyways, so you're learning with me, okay? So next time I say that, your response is kind of like one of these, you know, God is good, and you say God is good all the time. And so when I say, well, I should have, you know, this is coming up, and your response is what? Look at your screen. Anyway, so... But a map up here, just to give you an idea of what Abram is called to do, okay? And so he's here from Ur, and he's traveling along that red line. You know, he wouldn't come straight across. Why? It's a desert, right? And so we know that he traveled up along the Euphrates River area, okay, and then moved up along the Tigris, okay, because he ended up in Haran. Now, it's subjective whether he went to Nineveh first or whether he followed this path to go straight to Haran, okay? But they go from Ur to Haran, which is north, okay? And then from Haran down, there's the King's Way. And so this is pretty much a well-found road going down here that he probably would have taken. But he then comes into the land of Canaan. And so over here then gives us the idea, according to the United States, how far that would have been. And so if you look here into the Midwest, probably the bottom of Wisconsin or Minnesota, maybe Iowa, traveling up into the near the border with Canada, and then back on down over into the Wyoming, Montana area. Okay? And he's doing all that on foot, okay? Along with all of his servants and slaves and his wife and the whole entourage that's going on. So this isn't just a, you know, just hop in the car and take a Sunday drive. This is a long process, okay? Some are, but a lot of them are still on foot. They may have had some wagons, but no, not necessarily. Well, there was probably wheels. There was wheels by that time. I'm sure there were wheels. But it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody had them. Does that make sense?
And everybody got to ride.
That's exactly right. Abram might be sitting on a camel, but it doesn't mean the slaves are. And they're going to keep at the speed of those who are walking because there's strength in numbers. And he certainly doesn't want to be out there with his little bitty army, quote unquote, that's going to help protect him, right? So they're moving at a slow pace. Well, he left his country, and secondly, he left his family. Now we're getting really even into more nitty-gritty of your comfortability, you know? Because I don't know about you, but it's my family, you know, which is kind of the hiding place, as, you know, than even more than my country. You know, I can get disparaged about my country, but my family, you know, when all else, I'm going to be a recluse in my house with my family. They're the ones that, well, God asked him not only to leave his country, God asked him to leave his family. And so when Abram obeyed, he obeyed in leaving his family. He left his kin. Now, I understand dad went with him to Haran, but dad died. The rest of his family still where? In Ur. Okay? Some, we understand, move up into the Haran area and stay there because we know later on that Abraham sends Eleazar, his servant, up into the Aram in order to get a bride for Isaac. Remember that? That's right. But what I'm saying is some of the kin then move up into Aram and stay in that area. Yeah, it doesn't say that. It says that they were there. So anyways, so the point is then he leaves his family. God says, leave your family, and he does. Okay? He left it all. Again, think missions now. Okay? When God called you to go, he didn't say, go, but stay within the reach of your family unit. He said, go. And many times, it's leaving your family. Now, honestly, in today's technological realm, you don't have to fully leave your family. I mean, with Skype and everything else going on, many missionaries are able to talk to their family on a daily basis. They're able to have video conferencing with their family on a daily basis. Grandma and grandpa are able to see the babies at the moment they're born, kind of stuff. But still, even with all that technology, there's something different about what? Being there. That's exactly right. And we have the ability to get on a plane and be anywhere today. But there's still a cost to that. And many people refuse to go into missions. Many people refuse to obey the call of God to go because they're maybe afraid of leaving their country, maybe not, but even more so, they don't want to leave family. I can tell you that one of the easiest, one of the greatest people groups that we can reach with the gospel are those who have left their family. The strings aren't there. It is hard to reach somebody who's still within the cocoon, if you would, of their family group. You get somebody out of the realm of their family, now they're open to what? Hearing other truth. Now, I say it that way. I mean, I understand we have the truth, okay? But from their perspective, go back into your days, okay? It was what? It was another ideology. But if you're in your little zone, it's hard to break through the zone. Devin, when we send the boys back, right, they come out, they go back where? To their family. What happens many times? They get distracted. The grab of the family. And so, so God calls Abram, because God knows he's going to do something special with Abram, and he tells him to what? Leave the distractions. Get out of your country. Get out of the materialism, guys. Okay? Leave the American mindset and get away from the distractions of your family. Go. The fields are white in the harvest. It only lacks laborers. Go. Well, he tells him not only to leave his country and his family, he also tells him to what? Leave his religious heritage. You say, no, I don't see that there. I don't see that there. That comes from Joshua 24, what I told about earlier, where Joshua talks about Abram and how he came from on the other side of the river where they served other gods. And so, again, God calls him to leave the religious foundation that he had as well. Now, understand it was improper, and understand that the death of Noah and the call of Abram happened within, let's say, 16 years of each other, I think I have on my chronology, okay? And so, fudge factor, whatever, basically same time frame. That means that Abram is still at least 50-something years old when Noah dies. That means Noah's still on the earth. Shem, Ham, Japheth are on the earth while Noah's growing up. What did I say? Noah. Abram's growing up. Thank you. While Abram is growing up, Noah, Shem, Ham, Japheth, they're all there. So the testimony of the flood is still there. But we already saw last week with the Tower of Babel how soon man what? for God. Within 100 years, man is already serving other gods, have already turned away from Yahweh. And so Abram is generations down then from those people who have turned away from God. And God says, comes to him and gives him a special call and says, you need to leave that. And you need to return to true worship. I don't know if you can remember a time like that in your life. I remember it in my life. And I remember the statement, I wasn't leaving Lutheranism to become a Baptist. Does it make sense? What I told the people was, I just want to be a follower of Christ. I want to be a follower of Messiah. That's what God was calling Abram to be a follower of the true God. Leave the traditions that you have and follow the truth. And I want to ask you, now I'm not telling you leave being a Baptistic individual or leave the Bible church or whatever, but straight up, if what we teach is not according to truth, you need to be willing to do what? To leave it. I believe we are seeking to teach according to truth. But being a follower of Yahweh has got to be the priority thing of my life. I want to be a follower of Christ. I want to be a follower of truth. I don't care what quote-unquote denominational title that it may place me under. Do you understand? It's not about a religious tradition. It's about the God who created the heavens and the earth. And there are some people up north, when you knock on doors, they say, I'm a what? I'm a Catholic. Okay? They understood. Their allegiance was to what? The religious tradition of being a Catholic. Down here, I'm a Christian. Oh, I'm a Baptist. I'm a Baptist. You knock on the door. Oh, I'm a Baptist. I don't care. I don't care if you're a Hindu. I mean, what I really care about is what? Do you know Jesus Christ as your personal Savior? Have you ever given your heart to the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords? Do you know that you're forgiven of your sins? Are you living a life that has the fruit that bears witness to the profession that you're giving? Too many people down here are walking in a religious tradition. They're serving the other gods. They're serving the gods of the land. And they're calling themselves a Christian. Do you understand? We've got to be careful. God has called us to leave religious tradition to follow Him and Him alone. Now, I hope that doesn't mean that you leave this tradition here, in a sense, okay? But that's the truth. I don't care. I mean, you may move on from someplace else, and you may find out that you like a church, and the church is what? It's not right. And you have to make the decision that you're going to follow truth and not a denomination, okay? That's the faith of Abram. But I want to look at quickly, semi-quickly here as well, which is not less so the good side here, and that is the failure of Abram. What I love about God's Word is there's great comfort in God letting me know that even these mighty men of faith, this faith hall of fame, role of dynamic servants of God, all what? Feet of clay, yeah. They've all failed. They have stumbled. They have fallen. They have made themselves into embarrassments before God. And it doesn't take long for Abram to show that he's just a sinner, saved by grace, being used by the sovereignty and glory of God for his purposes. So what do we see? Well, first of all, we see situation number one, the famine. Now, I acknowledge the fact right off the bat that what I'm going to say right now is debatable. Okay? This is Bob's interpretation of this moment. I consider this a failure for Abram. Okay? Some people would debate me on this one. Okay? But hear me out for a moment. And we have situation number one. We see that Yahweh, first of all, revealed the land. Is that not true? As we read in Genesis chapter 12, after this blessing, we read verse 4. So Abram departed as Yahweh had spoken to him, and Lot went with him, and Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Then Abram took Sarai, his wife, Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their possessions that they had gathered, and the people whom they had departed in Haran, and they parted to go to the land of Canaan. So they came to the land of Canaan, and Abram passed through the land to the place of Shechem as far as the terebinth trees of Morah, and the Canaanites were then in the land. Then, verse 7, what happened? Yahweh what? Appeared. Yahweh appeared to Abram and said, to your descendants I will give what? This land. Okay, is there any doubt right now that Abram, that God did what he said he would do for Abram? That he would let him know when he got to the land? No. What did God do? He appeared to him. I mean, this wasn't even a, was it the pepperoni pizza and I just kind of dreamt that thing by mistake. God appeared to him and said to him, this is it. This is the land. Yeah, it was because I had that pepperoni pizza at your house in front of us. And so, but I know it wasn't the real kind of pizza. It wasn't a real pizza. That's why I had those kind of dreams, because it wasn't the real stuff. Anyway, so, but that's an inside joke, y'all. You just have to deal with that one. So, but God, God revealed it. There could be no mistake right now for Abram to know that this is it. This is the land. God called me to Augusta. If you're a native Augustanite, I apologize for this, but it's not the place I would have chosen. Okay? I mean, Tom, I know Tom. Tom and I have been talking. I mean, he hates humidity, and I said, listen, it grows on you. Literally, it's like mold. Anyways, for Bob, I know that God called me to Augusta. I put my fleece out. I tried to make it wet. I tried to make it dry. I tried to make it something in between. God met all my fleeces. I know that God sent me here. And I remember back in 1992 when I was doing Desert Storm duty in St. Louis and I wanted to go someplace else. My life was in a shambles. I wanted to get out. When I had the month by myself while I was waiting to get all my programming done so I could come and bring my family there, and I was screaming out to God, God, I remember the joy of my salvation. I don't know what it's like, and I want to leave Augusta, and da-da-da, because Augusta's my problems, and all this kind of stuff. And God picked me up, and he slammed me up against the wall, probably 10 times, because I'm worse than Peter. And he said, but I sent you to Augusta. And he did it in a way that there's no way that I could ever dispute that God sent me to Augusta. I mean, and he reminded me of all that stuff. Okay, God. Okay. I'll submit. You sent me to Augusta. I at least want to know why I'm going back to Augusta. Well, then, this was toward the fall, toward the end of my 7 months, that I'm still fighting all this. And so God finally gave me a little bit of an inkling of why I was going back, and it still wasn't right. I just interpreted it all wrong. So I know. And even when the previous church, when I thought we were going to be planting churches, which we are, huh? We have our own ways of thinking we're going to do things. And when I thought we were going to do this in the kingdom kind of concept, and it all blew apart literally, and I began to do, when I was praying to God what God wanted me to do, and I saw the sheep all over the place because of the shepherds, doing wrongfully, and I was one of them, and I'm not picking on others. I understand that there were things for me to learn coming through that. But as I prayed and as I analyzed it, I went back to the fact that God had what? Called me to Augusta. And he had never issued me a call anywhere else. He never called me away yet. There was once, twice, that there were inklings, there was potential opportunities, but I never felt that God was saying that was yours, that was not the call. And so God was calling me to minister to the sheep that he had. And that even though they were out there, it was my fault. And my job was to stay and continue to do what he had called me to do. So for Bob, even though I would like to be in the mountains or someplace else, evangelizing deer and all that kind of stuff, that's not where God's called me to be. So it's very easy for me, okay? So in the same way with Abram knows this is the land. You get my point? Okay, well, what happens next? Circumstances happened, didn't it? Circumstances. Life happens. So what happened in the circumstances? There was a what? A famine. And it makes sense, guys, doesn't it? I mean, there's not much food in the land. And it's your job to do what? Provide for your family. And so you need to make the decision. What are you going to do for your family? Are you going to let them starve? So no, I got to make the decision. This is not a message for you, Tom. I'm sorry. If you feel like this is aimed, it's really not aimed. I was praying this week, man. Let Tom have cotton in his ear where it needs to have cotton in his ears. Anyways, what are you going to do? Well, as a guy, we're going to do whatever it takes. The sad thing is, I've got to do whatever it takes within the already revealed will of God. God had already revealed, from Bob's perspective here, God had already revealed his will for Abram. He wanted Abram to go to the land that he was going to show him. He showed it to him. And now there's a test. Circumstances. There's a test that comes into his life. Is Abram going to endure the test? Is he going to stay? Is he going to do what God had called him to do? Well, what do we read? Abram left. Abram continued heading south. Clearly, God wouldn't want his family to suffer like this. And so he left the land. I believe that was a failure. It was a failure that led to our second situation. And that was the situation of Egypt, which is in a greater situation. And do you realize that sometimes we don't get it? That one sin leads to what? Another, and usually what? A larger one. One little lie usually ends up leading to a bigger lie because you got to cover the first lie. Does that make sense? Well, we got one little failure, and I'm going to put it as a failure, not necessarily a sin, although the reality is what? There was a lack of faith that happened there, and it was a lack of faith on Abraham or Avram to believe and to trust in the provision of God. He didn't believe, this is Bob's interpretation, I'm reading into Abram, and please forgive me for that, and judge not lest you be judged, but I do want to judge myself in this, okay? Because I remember when I first came down here, because I knew that God called me down here, and I lost my job before I even came down, you know? And so I came down, and I didn't have a job, and I was with 3 months living off of the money that they gave me to pay for the move, and now also I'm in credit card debt, and we're eating beans, if that. And I remember the temp agency calling me up saying, well, you know, we have this data entry job, and I got a master's degree and everything. And so I'm what? I'm overqualified. So nobody wants to hire me because I'm overqualified. And if I get another job that's going to pay me more, I'm going to instantly leave. Well, they don't understand that my dad worked in me loyalty. And I'm going to work. I'm not going to leave to the highest bidder. I'm where God has led me, and I'm going to be loyal to be there because that's what God has worked. God worked for my dad to work in me. Okay? So, and I believe loyalty goes both ways, and the sad thing is it doesn't happen in our culture today. But that loyalty. Well, were you willing to do that? And I said, looky, it's better to what? And we talked about this, right? It's better to have beans on the table than nothing. I'd rather have my family eat something than to have one meal a day or two meals a day. And so I took the job, you know, and that led me into being an inventory control clerk and da-da-da-da-da. You know, anyways. And so it still wasn't a whole lot of money, but still it was what? Beans on the table, okay? And so the point is that Avram, from Bob's perspective here, and Bob has struggled with this in his past, so I'm not saying I'm so much better than Avram. I don't mean it that way at all. But I understand it. I've gone through my wildernesses too. Avram, you know, is a new believer here. I mean, think about it. We tend to think of him as this guy, mighty man of faith, but he's a new believer. And I think he just didn't believe to trust God enough to provide for him. Well, he goes to Egypt, and what happens in Egypt? Well, he finds out about Egypt's morality. I think he knew it before he went, because he's already warning his wife about it before they even get there. And Egypt's morality is that it's okay for them to have multiple wives, but it's not okay for them to have somebody else's wife. And so what they figured out was they just kill off the husband and then they can marry the wife. Because then it's not adultery, is it? So it's okay for them to find a reason to kill off the husband and then they just take the woman because it's not adultery. So polygamy's okay, adultery's not okay, but murder's alright. So we just kill the guy, marry the woman, and we're good. Now we look at, huh? Abraham had it all figured out. He knew it. So he tells Sarai to tell a half-truth. You say half-truth? Yes. Because she really was his half-sister. She was the daughter of Terah by another mother. They were both descendants of Terah. They just had other mothers. Terah had multiple wives. Gets a little messy here, doesn't it? Okay? And so Avram actually married his half-sister, Sarai. And so he says to Sarai, his wife, who he's always claimed to be his wife, who I'm sure he's having a relationship with as his wife, okay? Hey, when we get there, just tell me you're my sister. Why? To save my neck. That's exactly right. It's not about Sarai. It's all about Avram. So Avram has his solution to the situation. The problem is that Avram's solution to the situation nullifies God's what? Ability to not only provide for him, but God's ability to protect him. Protect him. Yeah, exactly right. I will bless those who bless you. I will curse those who curse you. Ooh, how soon we forget the promises of God. Well, we know Sarai is taken captive to be a wife of Pharaoh. Now, you understand, and I don't have time, we'll talk about this a little bit more next week, but you understand the prophetic importance of this moment? If Sarai would have had a night with the king, with Pharaoh, and she would have had a child, it would have destroyed the whole redemptive plan of God. You get it? I mean, this is huge. This is huge. This is satanic warfare. There's spiritual war behind the scenes. We're not even going there yet. I don't have time to go there. I mean, I'm overtime already. That there's spiritual war that's going on over this. This isn't just physical. All these circumstances, these solutions. There's a spiritual war going on, and Satan is seeking to destroy the plan of God. Just like he doesn't want you to go into the fields whitened in the harvest. Just as God has called you to leave your country, your family, your religious background, in order to go to the place that He's going to show you so you can tell people about Him, it's a spiritual war. Satan doesn't want to see people get saved. He'd rather see you just enjoy living fat off the fat on the land. And so, this whole concept in the spiritual realm is to destroy the plan of God. Well, we have what? God's intervention. Yahweh's intervention. God says, all right, I got to get involved at this moment. Okay? Now, did it take God by surprise? It didn't take God by surprise. But again, God is the Arnold Schwarzenegger behind the Danny DeVito. You get it? And there are times when I what? I mess up. I open up my mouth and I blow it. And God's got to what? He's got to fix up my mess ups. But it doesn't take God by surprise. We know that all things work together for good to those who love God and are called according to His purpose. God has a purpose. God has a plan. God has a way. Do I believe, do I trust God in all of that? Now, we can say, well, God knew it all and it was okay, and so therefore there is no failure on Abram's part here. Abram only did what God had ordained for him to do. Man, that's just so wrong. But you know what? There's a lot of people that try to skirt their sin by drawing the sovereignty card. Well, if God didn't want me to do it, He could have stopped me from doing it. But clearly, it was God's will for me to commit adultery. It was God's will for me to be a homosexual. It was God's will for me to do X, Y, and Z. Now, I picked two big ones that you're all going to agree with me on, right? But what about gossip? I know we don't gossip. Yes, we do. What about feeding our flesh as opposed to feeding the Spirit? What about choosing to do my will rather than His will? What about not going into the fields white unto harvest? Now, I'm not saying everybody here has got to go to Lithuania or Moldova or Congo or wherever. It may be your neighborhood. And that's even harder sometimes because you now have the distractions of your family and your country in front of you, so you're not doing what you're supposed to do. But I've got to believe that God is calling His people to fulfill His plan, to get up and go, to leave their country, to leave their family, to leave their religious heritage, to go to the land that He's going to show them, to fulfill the purpose that He has for them. And His people just need to be what? Willing and obedient. To follow the plan, the purpose, the way of God. My ways are far beyond your ways, saith Jehovah. My thoughts are not like your thoughts. And that word thought there Remember, go back to the time when every thought and intent of the heart of man was evil. And we talk about the word thought there. We're talking about conspiring and scheming and planning, plotting. That's the word. God says, I don't strategize like you strategize. My strategizing is so far beyond your strategizing. And my ways then are beyond the ways that you will ever pick. So, how faithful have you been to answer God's call in your life to go to the land that He's going to show you? How quickly or easily do we lose faith in God's ability to provide and protect? We worry. Circumstances come and we say, and we trust in our own prowess rather than God's faithfulness. Finally, are there areas in your life right now with which God is asking you to trust Him? Are there areas in your life right now that you know? And again, I talked toward Tom. I mean, everybody, we all know his transition. And so this is all about Tom. And whew, boy, we can just... I just happened to be there when God was speaking to Tom today, you know. And no. That's pretty easy for Tom to know where he's at right now. I mean, he doesn't need a message. He doesn't need me to come in with this message for Abram to kind of know, let him know that he's in between. And he's looking for God to kind of give him an idea. Abram wasn't between jobs, y'all. You get it? Abram had a good life. And God called him to leave it. This isn't a message if you're in between jobs that God's just working with you. This is a message saying, are you fat, dumb, and happy right now? And is God getting ready to upset your apple cart and call you to do something that's beyond the ordinary, that's going to make your family, your friends, and others think, wow, this is kind of weird. Now, I don't know for Ben and Liz how God was working in Ben's life, but I know for some to see Ben get up and just go to Utah just was kind of like, wow, where did that come out of? But clearly it came out of what? His prayer and his belief that God was calling him to a land. And when they got there, He would show him the area. And so now you can say, whew, I'm glad that was... God answered that prayer before that message came. So Ben did it for us. That is so good. No, don't go there yet. Ben's already gone. So clearly, he already answered his call for whatever God's going to do in his life. What's God want to do in your life? Let's pray. Father, I thank You for Your goodness to us. I thank You for Your love. You are an awesome God. You are faithful in all things. And Lord, I pray that You would help us to be faithful, to follow You, Your plan, Your purpose, Your way. We know, Lord, that You have a way of providing for us beyond what we could ever imagine. And God, I pray that You would help us to magnify You and glorify You in all that we do. Lord, I do pray that You would raise up from within this little body men and women, boys and girls, who would enter into, truly, truly enter into the fields that are wide unto harvest. Whether they enter in with both feet fervently here in the Augusta area, or whether, Lord, You call them to another land. Lord, I know that it's their heart that You care about. And so, God, I pray that they would be willing vessels to go. And, Lord, if You call half the body away, and, Lord, and we just continue to grow, that's what it's all about. And so, God, I pray that if we're to stay small, it's because You want to just use us as a source of discipling believers to go forth into your promised land, into Your fields, and to see people get saved all around the world. Lord, I pray that You would be magnified and glorified in each of our lives. In Christ's name, amen.